Talk, our first in a series of the New Clubs podcast. Today I'm delighted to have the opportunity to talk to Carl Stevenson, or as you all know him, as I do, Chef Carl. Actually, Carl has been a chef at the New Club for 17 years. And we know, Carl, that you can knock up some wonderful dishes for us. And during lockdown, you've been very creative with the takeaway meals that you have prepared. I just want you to know that it's been very much appreciated by our members. But where did it all start? What made you become a chef?
Well, good morning, Mary. Nice to have this opportunity to run through a bit of my early life. Well, my early memories was creating things on toast as a very young child in the kitchen. I remember popping in the kitchen and just grabbing a piece of toast, putting some cheese and some toppings on. My mother was in catering and my father worked in a chocolate factory. So I had sort of like that ingrained in me from a very young age. And a friend of my late father's, he was actually a chef. And I got round to actually baking bread. And he actually said to me, you maybe should think about taking this up as a profession. So that's my earliest memories of why I wanted to become a chef, I think, yeah.
So he was probably one of your mentors, but perhaps you had other mentors during the early days.
Yes, I suppose. I never had a mentor as such. I just remember him mentioning that. It was more of a motivation than a mentor, because I remember almost finishing school and the teachers back in the days, when I came from Hull, were very industrial, and they took us around these factories, dirty, stinky factories with grease and oil and noise. And I thought, well, I don't really want to go into that for the rest of my life. And I realised that people needed to eat every single day. And remembering my early background, I decided to enrol in 2 years at Hull College and have never looked back since.
Did you do any travelling during that time, or have you travelled extensively? You do have a very varied menu.
Yes, well, as a chef, in your early days, you're encouraged to stay no longer than 12 months to 18 months in any particular place to get as much experience as possible. So my first job, funny enough, my first full-time job, I actually moved to Evesham. That's how I ended up in this part of the world many years ago. I spent 3 years there with a wonderful chef, Kathy Young, and she was very strict, Welsh, big lady, but really ingrained me in my early years. And then I decided to join the Merchant Navy for some crazy reason. I suppose coming from Hull and a seafaring background, one day I decided to join the Navy. So I went back to Hull and they took me on. I remember getting on a minibus to Barry Island with all these big hairy sailors. And we got stuck on this converted proper trawler. And off I went off to the Arctic, would you believe? And I did 3 months in the Arctic with this crazy chef that used to talk to the food. He was a ventriloquist as well. So he used to undo the oven door and talk to, and get the food to talk to him and all sorts. So I was held up with this crazy chef for 3 months. So that was quite interesting. I continued and we circumnavigated the British Isles and did a full survey of all the fish in the British Isles. And we could eat and cook everything that we'd landed. And we also managed to sell a bit to make a bit of money. And then my final trip, I worked for the Ministry of Defence and we went out to what's called Ocean Station Lima, which sounds great, but it's basically halfway between here and America, releasing weather balloons and tracking things. It was a very good time. I mean, trying to cook in those heavy high seas, everything had to be battened down, very exciting. We had to rescue a couple of ships at one point, and it's a very dangerous job. I mean, it was a converted trawler, so one of the crew actually got crushed by a metal door, like you see on these TVs, and we had to rush him there. So it was very interesting and very challenging trying to cook, like I said, when you're constantly moving all the time. And then fate would have it that on a trip back, we actually crashed the minibus and had to get a train. And I ended up sitting next to a manager for an Italian opera composer, Giancarlo Menotti, we knew as the maestro, and he held up in Scotland in this massive mansion and just happened to be looking for a personal chef. So I thought, oh, well, I've had enough of sailing now, so I went to be his personal chef. So off I went to Gifford, just outside of Haddington in Scotland, and I was his personal chef. And that was, again, very, very interesting. A massive big house looking after himself, his son, his son's wife, and all the guests that they had. And I had to do everything, basically cook it, serve it, I used to have to do breakfast trays every morning, take them upstairs to the kitchen, to the bedrooms for all the different people. I then had to do afternoon teas, morning coffees, lunches, and serve all those. That was very interesting. And also in all the guests. I mean, at one point we had the equivalent of the Italian royal family. They wanted to do a big dinner. They had a massive big ballroom with like four chandeliers, great big thing, beautiful. And I thought, well, how am I going to do this? So I enrolled my brother, the gardener, the plumber, the handyman, the guard, everybody else. And we somehow managed to pull this off. And they actually had a fantastic time. I'll never know how we did it, but we'd managed to do it. And then after I left there, about a year later, I never actually found out until about 5 years later, but they actually rang up my mother in Hull and asked if I would come and cook a meal because they had the Queen Mother coming for dinner. And my mother just turned around and said, no, terribly sorry, he's too busy. So I missed out on cooking for the Queen Mother.
Well, wow, that's fabulous, Carl. I had no idea there were so many things going on in your life, because I know very early on you also entered a lot of competitions, but I wonder whether you really needed to enter the competitions at that stage with so much interesting cooking behind you. How did you do in those competitions?
Well, they all started when I joined the Beverley Arms Hotel, which is not too far outside of Hull. So I was back more where I'm at home. And the chef there was entering a competition, and I was his assistant, if you like. And we went to Leeds and did this, and I sort of got a bit of the bug. And then we saw this advert for Young Chef of the Year. And he said, why don't you give it a go? I'll be your assistant type thing and help you through it. And we decided to do it. And it was very, very interesting, I must admit. And he did really well helping me along. And we went over to Blackpool, fantastic thing. Met a load of, because they had stars of the day as guests to eat and serve. So I had all those to do. And it was just exciting time. I was young and exciting. We went to Blackpool, I did Glen Eagles, and I ended up in the grand final at Grosvenor House and met chefs.
Were they important to you at the time? Because I know there was some story about the Guildhall. What happened there?
Yeah, I think I was just too young and excited at the time and didn't realise what doors and opportunities it really could have opened. I was just in awe of it all, really. And looking back, it could have put me on a different path. Not that this one hasn't been great, but yeah, definitely missed out. But the London trip was organised by Roy Ackerman of the Young Chefs Guild. And because I'd done so well in these competitions, they invited me and I think about 8 or 12 other young chefs to be assistants to the top chefs of the day. These were TV chefs like you know them now. They were more known to us in the industry. This was before all the TV stardom, but they were very, very well-known chefs. The one you might know is Brian Turner. I think he's still on the TV. But it was the Rue brothers, all the top chefs of the day. And we got to help. And I was paired, I can't remember who I was paired with, but I was paired with the Baron of Beef. I remember that. That was the main thing. And then we were asked, me and this other chef, to actually wheel out this Baron of Beef into the banqueting hall in London with all these guests in black tie. And then they had the Queen's Fusiliers, or whatever you call them, with the big trumpets, and they trumpeted us in, and we wheel this massive big Baron of Beef, all dry ice, and it was all filmed, and we got to put that through. So that was actually quite an interesting time on that one, yeah.
I think there might have been some of our members who could well have been at that 800th anniversary. And who knows, you know, but I'm sure they'll let us know if that's the case. But let's just bring you back to today, Carl, and your cooking styles. Have you actually got a favourite style of cooking?
I wouldn't say favourite, but I was classically trained in kitchen and larder, and that's when I got my awards. I went to London. I was doing advanced catering in Cambridge Regional College, and I did advanced kitchen and larder, and came number one out of the whole country in that, which was a fantastic achievement. And I went to London to a black tie event and get presented with my trophy from the Réunion des Gastronomes, who had sponsored it. And so making stocks and sauces from scratch, you know, 48 hours to make the bone broth, and then another 12 hours to make the sauce and the gravy, I think that is what I really enjoy. And I try and do that with all the menus that I do here. And that, I think that really makes a big difference. So I do enjoy that.
And also, I think you also enjoy pastry, don't you? I know that those of us that are Glinter Master Chef or Bake Off know that for pastry chefs, it's all about creativity and precision. You enjoy that style of cooking? Because we know how your wonderful teas for members have always been well supported. But tell us a little bit about the pastry chef side.
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a Marmite issue because although I actually love it and what I create is absolutely, you know, I'm very artistic. I think a lot of chefs, that's why I become chefs, you are artistic. You like to bring things together. But like you said, it is more of a science, very much of a science. And I did struggle and I still struggle with it. It's not like any other style of cooking where you can just throw it together and add a bit of this and add a bit of that. It has to be, and I've got proper, you have to have the electric scales and it's down to the last gram. It's quite unbelievable. It's quite incredible in a way, sorry. So I do struggle, but as far as the decorating side goes, I absolutely adore that. I mean, many of the members may well have seen what I've done. I've done an entire edible village with illuminated churches, with edible stained glass windows. I've done individual little bird boxes with the robins. I've done a rugby ball, edible snooker table, an edible garden. You name it. I actually love the challenge, like you said, of this thing. I've done Edmund Inkwell's books, an army helmet. So that side of things I really do enjoy, yeah.
Well, I think that's a bit of a challenge to our members, Carl. If you've made all of those things, who knows what will come up next when people ask for some pastries. Who knows what will come up. But let's go back to your kitchen itself. What a sort of piece of equipment is your favourite in the kitchen? What don't you like in the kitchen? Just a little bit about that.
Well, it's quite odd. Of all the things in the kitchen, the actual thing I think is, which I enjoy and I think is the most practical, is actually a silicon spatula. And that is the most invaluable thing for me, I think. Because when I was young and training, the amount of chefs that would just like leave a bowl of something on the side, the thought they'd emptied it, and the chef would come along and say, no, there's another two portions in there and blah, 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 and things like that. So this and a spatula is fantastic. Emptying any of your machines, your bowls, whatever you want, you get the very last drop out of it. And I think that's the thing I use the most, and I think I always look for.
And anything you don't like in the kitchen, other than
well, it's not so much in the kitchen. It's what I don't like when I'm out, I suppose, and when I'm prepping it. It's a big bugbear, man. It has been for years. It's chefs that leave pips in lemon wedges. I don't know what it is. I've just got this OCD thing about it. So I make sure when I do the lemons for anything I do, every single pip is out of it. Yeah. So that's one of my bugbears, isn't it?
That's great. Well, what about some advice for us, for home cooks? How can we become more creative? Is this an area that you can advise us in? What sort of ingredients could we use for cooking that maybe we don't? Again, having watched MasterChef and the Bake Off, you see a number of creative ideas there that we probably don't use at home. So what's your advice to us home cooks?
Yeah, I mean, you're very lucky, I think, as far as being able to get ingredients is concerned. I mean, most of the supermarkets now do a very good, like an international range. Obviously online these days, you can get anything at all. And I suppose it's very difficult because it's like anything, it's practice and years of work that gets you to where I am. So I would say practice and enjoy it. Nothing can go wrong. Well, it can go wrong, obviously, but it's only some food. So have a go. I mean, I used to work at, before I came here, or the reason why I'm here, at the King's Head. And for 5 years, I was the manager and the chef there. And I used to run gourmet nights, and they were sold out 3 months in advance. And nobody ever knew the menu, ever. You just booked a table, and it was, like I said, full every single week. And you sat down, you had a 4 or 5 course meal. And then afterwards, I would come out and explain. And back in those days, I used to try the most wackiest and weirdest things I could think of to serve people. And in all the years, and I did it for so long, I only had one person send a plate back saying they couldn't eat it. And afterwards, they say, oh, I'd never have thought of that. I'd never have eaten that. I'd never have put that with that. But I think you put yourself off. I think be brave, try it. If you don't like it, then just amend what you don't like. So I would say go out there and really enjoy yourself with it.
Okay, thank you, Carl. There's some great ideas that have come up through there. It has been a pleasure to talk to you, Carl. I know we all agree on one thing, and that we can't wait to get back to enjoying your food in the dining room at the club when it all opens up again.
So finally, well, thanks very much for that.
Finally, Carl, can I just ask you to choose a piece of music to play us out?
Yes, well, the opening piece of music I chose as well, and that was The Divine Comedy. And I think the way he writes the lyrics, and it just seemed appropriate for this position we're in. So I thought I'd finish with, I love ska music and reggae. So this one's a bit of like a ska music. It's called At the Club, which again, I think is quite appropriate. And that's by the Pioneers, I think it is. So that's what I'd like to end with. And thanks very much for having me on this podcast.
It's all